Cleaning up, this is the time to tell stories. And when I got introduced to soil physics, I was a junior in college and heading to Utah State. Some of you may know Sterling Taylor of him. When I got there, I called him up and asked him what it would take to become a soil physicist. And he said, well, don't take any of my soil courses. You get your math and physics, and you can learn soils on Sunday afternoons. It proved not to be correct. I've been trying to learn soils ever since. The other story is, some of you may know John Hanks, but John was a researcher in Fort Collins, Colorado, for many years. And John was giving a lecture on, at that time, soil physics involved glass beads and pure physics. And they had done some vapor transport studies. And John was extolling the virtue of the glass bead system. Everything worked perfectly. The vapor transport was going just as predicted. And some of you know John stutters a little bit, and he said, and then I got to the damn soil. And he said, I share his frustration sometimes. Well, I wanted to talk about something that I think is relevant in soil physics. And it kind of started when I got to Washington State University. Walt Gardner had come out with his How Water Moves in Soils physical models and showing, illustrating the fact that when you have two soils, a fine soil over a course, you would have what we now call a capillary barrier. And in fact, as you can see in the illustration, Mother Nature has created a number of those, and particularly in the Columbia Basin, there are many fine soils over coarse sediments. It creates a flow barrier such that infiltrating water is held up and, of course, approaches saturation. And we know from a number of studies that have gone on from this simple concept to complex, that the performance of the capillary barrier depends on the slope and the specific soil characteristics, precipitation, and amounts. The practical applications in Walt's presentation, you may notice that he cited Gulf Associations as sort of a funding agent for his film. And so the design of a golf course, particularly the putting fields, putting surfaces, putting greens, ball field designs, incorporate that concept. So anytime you see Tiger Woods or Brett Favre or someone else throwing a football, just remember soil physics created the playing field for them. But on to our Canadian connection. There's a considerable amount of work done in Canada on mine waste disposal using capillary barriers, and I'll talk briefly about that. And then, of course, in hazardous waste and nuclear waste situations. And as you can see from the slide and the physics of the water release characteristics, those dissimilar characteristics, that the trick of the juxtaposition of the two soils creates a hydraulic barrier so that the soil fine soil has to become very wet before it transmits to the sand beneath. In modern parlance now, we heard a presentation on studying ET caps, supposedly, and what we're talking about is what the previous speaker said, that there is a store and release concept here, as the water is stored. Thank you. As water is stored in the soil, that it keeps it I have a little problem here. Anyway, I'll move on since my thought process is stumbling here. One of the issues with capillary barriers is the fact that as the silt, as the fine material is on a slope, it tends to drain, and there's a in Canada, there are the cover systems that have been designed are often very quite complex. The low permeability layer is the one that stores water, and in this case, for humid sites, the cover with capillary barrier effect can act as efficient oxygen layer, so our oxygen barrier, so that tailings that normally would produce acid mine drainage do not. This shows some modeling by our Canadian colleagues, where pH with the cover, excuse me, just illustrating the fact that with no cover, mine tailings have become acid, and with the anyway, finally, in the Yucca Mountain proposed study of disposal of waste at Yucca Mountain, where spent fuel is proposed to be stored underground facilities. Capillary barrier has been proposed compared to a titanium shield, The titanium shield is estimated to cost some $14 billion. And the capillary barrier is, should it work properly as advertised, would be fraction of that cost. At Hanford, there have been legacy wastes, and this illustration shows the modes of disposal of the waste. In the ponds and cribs and tanks and buried waste facilities, one of the questions has been, can we do some engineering that will allow us to keep the waste stored in the subsurface? And the object has been to evaluate that possibility. So there was an engineering team set up in mid-1980s, culminating in several years of research, where we put lysimeters and constructed a waste site over a Hanford crib. The objectives were to assess the constructability, quantify the costs, and document the physical, hydrologic, and ecological performance. Now, there was a committee of engineers, and the evaluation was to try and establish a cover system that would last 1,000 years. You understand that a committee designing something often leads to something that is not necessarily the best. So this is a camel as opposed to a horse. But nevertheless, it was after consideration, one of the best things that we could come up with for all the criteria that was listed. And it consisted of two meters of thick silt wall over a capillary break. And underneath the capillary break was rock as a bio barrier, and then an asphalt layer to collect the waste. And then we looked at two side slope configurations. Interesting enough that the small footprint of the basalt side slope on the right and the consisted of about a third of the total bio barrier. A larger gravel side slope, a more gentle side slope, was about three-fourths of the total area. We looked at increase in climate, increase in precipitation with anticipation of a climate change. And fortuitously, the record annual rainfall occurred the first two, 3 years. This is showing some of the precipitation events. The red indicates the water applied by irrigation. And the results showed that essentially all of the water was recycled from the silt loam plots. These are some of the storage measurements from the silt loam. And basically, the first 3 years from the irrigation and the record rainfall showed cycling, which basically after those first 3 years became essentially constant and never exceeding the design storage of the system. On the other hand, on the side slopes, about between 10 and 15% of the annual precipitation did drain through the sides. And about 20 millimeters a year occurred from the side slopes. Summarizing that capillary barriers are created when fine soils overlay coarse. With proper design, soil types, layer thickness, and capillary considerations can limit water entry and buried waste to near zero amounts. And our capillary barrier, designed to last 1,000 years, has been performing successfully for the last 17 years with an average measured drainage near zero. The key issues are that current side slope design and lateral diversion increase with deep drainage. How does this water impact the waste? What measurements are needed? We've used geophysics to probe the subsurface at Hanford with moderate success. But are there other things? Can predictions of long-term impacts be evaluated and acceptable in the short term? In other words, do these short-term tests tell us what's going to happen 1,000 years from now? So what we want to know is, while the barrier itself is performing good, what do we have to do with the side slopes to mitigate the amount of water that may be carrying some of the subsurface contamination to the groundwater? And here is some of that, the dam soil. Notice that there is distinct layering, and it reflects a lot like you may have seen in Dan Stevens' work several number of years ago in water resources, where he showed that water transmitted the anisotropy of the subsurface with these layers is huge, 10 and 20 times. And you have to use that kind of anisotropy in the modeling to get the correct plumes. Also, a complication is the clastic dikes, where there are vertical features that control the flow as well. And with that, I'll stop and entertain questions. Thank you.
limited time for questions, so if anyone has a question. No.
We have one right here. Dan Hillel's right here.
Dan Hillel. That's a good question, and the answer is yes, it probably does. And I actually had to try to capture a picture of fingering, because that is an issue that's been addressed by a number of very competent people.
Is that picture on the right thing, an expression of this kind of thing?
Well, that's actually a somewhat controversial story, how they were those plastic, so-called plastic dikes were formed. But in answer to your question, there was a study done at Hanford where water was applied in these layered sediments, and fingering does occur, but then as soon as it gets to the next layer, it's damped out. So if there's enough of them, it kind of doesn't matter too much. Unless you get water going down one of these classic dikes.
Anybody else? Let's give another round of applause. Thank you. Thank you.